What's happening, everybody? Hope your 2020 is treating you right. Today's guest is drummer Armand Majid of the one and only New York hardcore group Sick of It All. Armand started playing with the group in 86, and with the exception of a couple years there, he's been with the band ever since, which is pretty incredible. Turns out Sick of It All was, in fact, built to last, right? It's amazing. Also of note for this episode is that I had fellow drummer Chris Enriquez from the awesome band Spotlights make another guest host appearance, so I hope y'all enjoy it. They got into Armand immigrating to the U.S. as a kid and landing in Jamaica, Queens, early exposure to New York hardcore, his favorite hardcore drummers, and a whole lot more, so hope y'all dig it. Crash Bang Boom Podcast can be found on iTunes Podcast, my SoundCloud and YouTube pages, Stitcher, Luminary, Google Play, Podbean, and more. If you like what you hear, feel free to check out any of the previous nearly 170 episodes and give me a like, a subscription, a positive rating, and or a glowing review. Any and all of the support is much appreciated. Lastly, shout out to my sponsor, New Orleans Record Press. If you're looking to release in vinyl, go over to neworleansrecordpress.com to look at the myriad vinyl coloring, packaging, mastering, electroplating, lacquer cutting, and more options. And you can use that handy little real-time quote generator to tally it all up and know what you're getting into. They also print both 12 and 7-inch records in 150 and 180-gram variants. So they got you covered. They'll even help you out with design if you need it. So check them out, and that's neworleansrecordpress.com. So without further ado, here we go. Armand Majid, Sick of It All, Chris Enriquez. What's happening? Wake the sleeping dragon. Crash, bang, boom.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Crash Bang Boom Drumming Podcast. I'm your guest host, Chris Enriquez, and I have a distinct pleasure of speaking with Armand Majid. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing that properly. From
Majid,
Sick of It All. Majid is it?
Yeah, Majid.
Majid, sorry. Armand Majid. I have a funny story as my intro. I first was introduced to hardcore music as a young man in New York in 1995. A friend of mine, Renee, was in a band with the original bass player, Richie.
Oh, yeah.
Cipriano. And they took me, it's the first time I ever left my house and went to the city without my parents, to see Sick of It All opening up for Helmet on the Scratch the Surface tour. I believe Helmet was on the Betty tour, and yeah. It was 1995 at Roseland.
Yep.
Almost
that
like
was
a
good
concert.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a great tour. The whole tour went really well.
That's awesome to hear. I mean, I'm going to get into that era of the band, which is an interesting one, because as many people know, that was sort of your major label era when you had the video for Step Down and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
that was when we first had signed to a major label, our first major release. We were in this whole new world, and it was like interesting because we had already kind of gone through all the bullshit of people giving us a hard time for being on a major. Just because we had something come out on Sony, which was the We Stand Alone EP out in Europe. So we caught a shitstorm over in Europe for being on Sony over there back in 92. Actually, the band had that come out, in 91? And touring on, the first couple of times we toured Europe, everybody that had it in for us for having a major label release came out, interviewed us, gave us all kinds of nonsense, and we didn't even know at that point that there was a Sony release. So we were used to those kind of interviews. We kind of gotten over the whole major thing.
You guys were definitely the first guinea pigs, for lack of a better word, for getting the scrutiny of being a hardcore band.
That's true,
band.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into that, I'm going to wrap up this part of the story, but it was a very impactful thing to see something like this coming from Long Island, where I'm from, where the first rock show I saw was Skid Row and Guns N' Roses at a Nassau Coliseum, and here I am, and there are skinheads, there's a pit, there are people fighting. I remember a guy spilled a beer on me and my friend Renee, who was probably about 10 years older at the time, just
so you fought him?
Beat the shit out of these skinheads in front of me, and I was probably about, you know, a little wee tall, like 5 feet tall, just like, holy crap. And that was my introduction to hardcore and to your band, Sick of It All.
Oh, boy.
So thanks for changing my life for better or for worse. But let's start with this. We got your name. I mispronounced it, but let's start with your name. What yep. bands have you been in, and how long have you been playing for?
I've only been in three bands my whole life. I started in Rest in Pieces as a guitarist first. Then I moved to guitar and vocals. And then I just went to vocals once we got Robbie Echevarria, also played in Helmet.
That's right.
Biohazard after that.
Yeah, played on Betty.
Yeah, he did. Yep. But so I was in Rest in Pieces. Then, Lou and Pete from Sick of It All are the guys that I've known the longest, that ever since I lived in America.
Oh.
Like, they're the guys that I've known the longest. I've been, you know, close with those guys since 1982, I
wow.
guess, something like that. So I've known them for a really long time, longer than anybody else. And so as soon as they started getting the idea that they wanted to start a band up, I was always hanging out, and I was, you know, had, you know, a musical kind of, you know,
connection.
Well, not so much connection, but just like I had the skills to like put a song together and stuff like that. So whatever they started doing, I was like right there if they needed help for something. And they ended up needing a drummer very soon after the band started, because the first drummer that they had was this guy Dave, and he only played one show with the band. And their original bassist too, Mark Goober, he was only in the band for that one very first show out at the Right Track Inn. And that was a show that Craig, who plays in Sick of It All now, he actually set up. Because
he was in Rusty Pieces as well.
Well, he was, but he was playing in Youth of Today. And that show is opening up for Youth of Today. So Craig set this thing up for Sick of It All to open for Youth Today.
That's interesting. So, not many people listening are going to be as excited about this as I am, because I'm from Long Island. But Sick of It All's first show is what you're saying, was in Long Island.
Right Track Inn.
Very interesting. Very cool. Yeah. I actually used to go there a lot. That was still a breeding ground for a lot of hardcore.
Oh, yeah. I used to go to shows out there all the time, because we were living in Queens. So we would take the trips out there. It was like that was the club for, mm-hmm. for Long Island for a handful of years, you know, all the hardcore shows happened there. So it was just an extension of the CB scene.
It's like you could call them on the phone back in those days.
Yeah, definitely. Find out.
Well, getting back to your history, you brought up an interesting point, which I actually didn't know. You were from another country before you came to New York. Where were you coming from?
Iran.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you first start discovering music and realizing that it was something that you loved?
Back in the 70s, when I was, you know, a little kid, and just realizing that, you know, anytime any kind of song came on the radio that was like even least bit hard rock, you know, I just gravitated towards that. And then from 70s hard rock, I wanted to hear 70s heavy metal, and then 70s heavy metal, you know, like, it took me to the new wave of British heavy metal, took me to punk and hardcore at the same time. So all of that was like the evolution of my musical tastes, but it was always in pursuit of like something heavier.
Right.
You know?
Right. You had a natural attraction to heavy music from
the
get-go.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Was this while you were still in Iran? Or?
Yeah, all the shit I listened to, like my first Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, stuff like that. Like all of the music I listened to back then was on pirated tapes.
Wow.
That I would buy in Iran that were just sold, you know, none of the artists saw any money from it, I'm sure. They were just like thrown together, recorded, like I had, you know, Black Sabbath on one side, Deep Purple on the other, kind of thing. And they were just like mishmash cassettes of all the popular stuff in the West.
Wow.
You know, and they also had a few record stores over there, so I ended up getting, like, Ted Nugent. You know, my first album was Cat Scratch Fever.
I mean, for the time, pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was just, like, you know, hard rock. And
so even predating your hardcore roots, you do have an experience, like, your struggle to find music dated before that, like trying to find cool shit, you know, cool shit. Like the Black Sabbath cassette tape you got was almost like getting a mixtape. It wasn't
exactly.
an actual record.
Yep. Yeah. And that's how a lot of the stuff was over there. It's just like, you know, sometimes you even have to work off of album art to even understand, like to even think that this band was like a heavy band.
Right.
And it would work. You know, it was surprising like how often that would work.
I remember that, you know. Yeah. It's an interesting thing too. Now, you know, people are like, oh, who even reads the liner notes? And the cover art and the liner notes were such a big part of that in the day. Well, you know, going back to your history with Sick of It All and being in New York, so you came to New York in, you said, 1982?
I moved over here in 1980. I'm half American. You know, okay. My mom's American. So my American grandparents lived in Jamaica, Queens. So when we fled the Islamic Republic, you know, because we were there all the way. We were there for like halfway through the hostage crisis. So when we came over, we moved right in with my grandparents in Jamaica, Queens. So that's how I ended up being like a Queens guy, meeting up with Lou and Pete eventually and going to high school in Queens and everything like that.
Now, when you moved to Queens and met the Collar Brothers, who, for those of you that don't know, I mean, most of you listening probably are Sick of It All fans already, but Pete and Lou Collar are the brothers in Sick of It All, lead singer and guitar player. Were you guys buddies before the band started?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the band didn't start until 86.
Right.
So we knew each other for a good 4 years before that.
Interesting. That's really cool. I mean, it explains a lot, too, of the longevity of Sick of It All, which is really, you know, kind of surpassed the majority of hardcore bands out there, and the ones that are still around really don't really have the same members as you guys.
Yeah, it's nuts. Like when you do the math and like how many years all these people have been together in different bands, like, you know, Agnostic Front's even been around longer than we have. Sure, they have like a different lineup, but one of the things today, I was, you know, in touch with Mikey Gallo, the bass player in Agnostic Front, and through our contact today, I realized that he had been in Agnostic Front for 19 years.
It's crazy.
And he's like the new guy.
Right.
So,
I remember him from, he's from Long Island.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So even like the hardcore scene is a weird place because you can have all this longevity and it surpasses so many other music scenes just because I think people are just more down to earth and maybe more humble and not so into their own shit that they, you know, ignore everybody else around them and they want to go off on their own tangent, you know?
Well, yeah. And in a hardcore culture, I guess what separates it is, you know, everyone always says it's more of a lifestyle than a style. I mean, it is a style of music too. It's evolved, which is a different story, but it's a genre / lifestyle that, or let's call it a subculture that encourages a certain attitude that you really can see in the incestuous family of it, where Craig was in Youth of Today and, you know, this guy was in that band and this band. Everyone was in sort of cross-pollination, especially in New York. But when did you actually first discover punk and hardcore music? It was very rich here, obviously, in New York.
There was a guy that lived a few blocks away from me that I just connected with through a friend that he didn't. At that point, he was out of high school already. But the guy that took me to my first show, which was Motorhead at Irving Plaza back in 81, the Ace of Spades tour.
Right.
That's
a big one.
But yeah, it was a great show. And but that guy, he introduced me to this guy that ended up living like just a few blocks away from me. So I ended up hanging out with him quite often. And one day he just happened to have the first Necro 7-inch.
Very old school, though. The, those first generation.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, stuff out of the Midwest, this crazy shit, you know, like that. I had never heard anything like it. And, you know, but from there, it kind of piqued my interest. And that's when I started listening to more English punk and, you know, the Oi stuff that was coming out of the UK. Everything. And, you know, back then it was Noise the Show. I think it was NYU. I think
Crucial Chaos?
No, Noise the Show. It predated Crucial Chaos.
Oh, this is a, you know, actually, I think Pokey might have talked about that on the episode we did. He mentioned a local radio show in New York that predated Crucial Chaos that he listened to. So I think it's
might be the same thing. I wouldn't be surprised because Noise the Show is like what everybody kind of tuned into back then. Okay. And like, it was the guy, he always yelled, Noise the Show. Everything was yelled, you know?
Right.
So, and you know, but they played a good mix of all of like the the current American hardcore stuff and the stuff coming out of England, whether it be oi or punk or whatever, you know. So that really kind of shaped it, kept us more open-minded than people tend to be nowadays. People have been kind of more narrow-minded for decades now, you know, compared to back then. Back then, you know, I was listening to heavy metal, I was listening to punk, listening to oi, I was listening to whatever, you know, anything that had any hint of aggression to it, I was interested in. So, you know, I didn't like build walls. I didn't like, you know,
I mean,
for myself.
That actually translates very much into your drumming style, which I was going to say, as a fan and somebody who's been listening to the band for, you know, over, oh my God, 24 years I've been listening to you guys now. And I mean this as a compliment, by the way. There are a lot of guys that play in, let's just focus on New York hardcore for a second, dudes that sort of have different styles and things that are not just more on the straightforward path of, you know, some guys have a hip-hop feel.
Yeah, the one genre and the one approach.
You were very much a heavy hardcore drummer, in my opinion. And
well, yeah, I mean, but you know, you look at my drumming influence, I take just as much from Clive Burr and Les Binks, you know, Clive Burr from Iron Maiden, Les Binks from Judas Priest, than I do from anybody from, like, Mackie, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, it's all mixed together for me, where I could think to myself, that has more of a Clive Burr feel, this has more of an Earl feel, this has more of a Mackie feel.
And the thing they all have in common, I guess, at the end of the day is, you know, people don't realize that there was a point in time when Iron Maiden was probably the most extreme thing you could find out there.
Oh, yeah, but that, you know, when Iron Maiden first came out, they actually were more extreme than they
ended up
became.
Being.
Yeah, later on.
A
like
punk at the time.
Yeah, and once they kind of lost that fieriness to them, I lost interest in the band as well.
Right.
Like, Peace of Mind was the album where I lost interest.
Okay, yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean,
It's the fact that Clive Burr wasn't playing on it, I think it has 100% to do with me losing interest.
Right, right.
Because Clive Burr was the guy that gave them that spark, you know, that energy level. It was all due to him, I think. You know, and I guess the songwriting as well, but Clive Burr was the guy that really made it sound that way. And Nico McBrain after that was slower. Everything was just kind of lazier sounding, and they lost me.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of your influences, which I want to elaborate more on, let's go back to you becoming a drummer. I mean, you kind of went through your transition of how you discovered heavy music, how you discovered hardcore. At what point did you pick up drums and decide that was something you wanted to pursue?
That was, you know what? I never got to say that I was actually in Straight Ahead as well.
That's right. And I could have corrected you on that too, but thank you for
and you know, so we go back to, you know, the first time I ever played drums, it was when I joined Straight Ahead.
Okay.
And it was the only reason being, again, because I was at all of their rehearsals. I was, you know, when they were NYC Mayhem, we would go to the rehearsals and just hang out. At a certain point, Tommy was playing drums and singing, which is
Tommy Ratt?
No, Tommy Carroll.
Tommy Carroll.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he, you know, he wanted to be a front man. And it was an awkward thing having a drummer sing in a, like a,
right.
What, you know, the type of band they were, which was like, I guess, kind of like thrash metal / hardcore.
Yeah.
Slash
like, how are you going to sing along with the band?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Tommy wanted to move to the front of the stage and, so it was basically between me and Billy Psycho, which were the two guys who were trying out for drums, and I got the job.
You got the gig, yeah. We're the ones, we're the only, we're the best, and the sorry for the fame, feel the glory, we're the best, pass the torch and say it's always. So it sounds like a lot of the stuff you got involved in was actually kind of like started with friendship before we started recording the interview. You mentioned you were not taught. So how did you learn how to play?
Even though I always listened to drums are always like the thing that I kind of honed in on, mm-hmm. you know, as far as like whatever I was listening to, I'd always listen to the drums. I always appreciate the shit out of the drums. But then when I was living in Jamaica, it was my mom, my brother, and I in a studio apartment.
Okay.
You know, coming over from Iran. My dad hadn't left yet. We were in this back apartment in my grandparents' house. So there just wasn't enough room for me to think to have a drum set.
Right, yeah.
So I asked my mom to get me a guitar. And she got me a guitar, and I started. I took a few months of lessons, and that got me started. And I actually, even to this day, I think I'm more comfortable on guitar than I am on drums, which is strange for a lot of people to think. All I really know how to do on drums is play Sick of It All songs. You know, if you asked me to improvise, I could do a little bit, but I'm sure at a certain point I would just fuck up because it's not all that natural for me. I'm not like a natural drummer for some reason. It's strange because I look back at videos of when I first started playing and I think to myself, wow, I'm just kind of letting it flow so much more back then. I'm like, I actually look more natural back then than I do now because now I'm thinking too much. I'm thinking too much about the songs and like, you know, trying to play everything perfectly and blah, blah, blah. And like sometimes I put too much pressure on myself. And
there's something to be said about the innocence, and I can relate as a drummer. I'm sure many people listening can too, which is that when you're still in the discovery mode, there are endless amounts of possibilities that you're trying to figure out wrong from right and is there a wrong from right.
Well, plus it's also the fact that you're just a human. You know, and back then you don't give a shit about, you know, is the tempo really fluctuating all that much? I don't know. It might be, but if it is, it might be totally natural, you know, but now I'm, you know, I tend to kind of think about tempo and snare hits being just so, and cymbal hits being just so and all, and everything trying to be like locked, kind of kick myself for being a little too rigid sometimes.
Well, actually, so interesting question. I always wanted to know this because some bands are different in the studio, but do you play to a click track?
What I do is I come up when we're working on new stuff. This is something I've done just for like the last couple of records.
Okay.
Because it never worked before. There were only a handful of songs in Sick of It All's career that would actually work to a click track. So what I've done now is I've created customized click tracks to suit the music.
Interesting.
So it goes from, you know, this tempo here, even sometimes in the middle of a verse, it might drop down a couple of beats per minute or speed up or whatever the song needs.
It out, or is it something
not really tapped out? It's more like I'll create the click track, and I'll play along to it. And I'll see what is wrong with it, and then once I have it to the point that I think it's really good, then I'll take it to the guys, and I'll get their input, and their input usually changes shit around quite a bit.
Okay,
because then it's not just about the drums anymore. It's about like I can't really pick that fast. You know, it's like it's like a, you know, when you deal with the different instruments, then like other factors come into play. So, you know, their input changes what I thought was good to be even better for what the song really is.
Yeah.
So now and that's the way we've been for the last couple of records. And what it does, I've noticed, is that makes my drum tracks take a fraction of the time that they used to.
Interesting. So because you're able to get through the recording process faster.
Way easier with a click.
More organized.
Yeah, organized, more kind of comfortable knowing that what I'm doing is right.
Okay.
As opposed to just kind of feeling shit out. And another thing about Sick of It All is that the band is, we operate off of a live energy, you know? Live energy doesn't work in the studio.
Right.
So
it's hard to capture for hardcore.
Yeah, and a lot of the time live energy is completely badly played. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's everything, especially as far as hardcore goes, is urgent and rushed. So you got, there are a lot of times where Pete will be like always jumping the gun on what I'm doing, you know, because he just tends to naturally want to play something as fast as possible.
A lot of non-drummers seem to do that too, you know, because I feel like as you become a more experienced drummer, you kind of learn through watching yourself live.
To sit back.
Like it's better to like lay back than to speed up.
And it's strange because I got Craig telling me he wants me to lay back more.
Right.
But then I got Pete, who cannot possibly ever lay back. So Sick of It All is one of those bands where we're always trying to like figure out what's right for a song because we got, you know, Pete's urgency and Craig wanting to be behind the beat.
Right.
And then there's me, and I create this middle ground between the two of them. So what I end up doing a lot is I end up recording by myself because once I know what everything that I'm doing, once I figured out my fills, once I figured out everything, then I'll just be like, you know what, guys, I think I'd be better off just playing it without you guys, and you guys could layer on top.
Right.
You know, just track later.
And Pete is a intense player. I mean, he's running, sprinting on stage half the time.
Right.
So it makes sense. You know, so going back to the major label records, I know we're talking about that. I was very curious about those just because I'd imagine with such a huge, you know, I'm assuming a bigger budget and all that. So you weren't using click tracks on Scratch a Surface or Built to Last.
You know, I remember fucking around with a click a little bit. I think there were parts. I think I might have actually recorded the song Scratch a Surface to a click.
Interesting.
But the engineer tapped it up a little bit for the choruses. And then he would go back down
for the
rest of the verses.
Like,
yeah.
Like pop, not that you guys are a pop band, but like that's a classic like pop song thing
right.
in the studio.
Yeah.
The song Jungle, I think, is probably for those, if you guys go back in the catalog, that is a very percussive track. It, to me, as a drummer, stands out of all the things you've done. There's like crazy shit going on. It's the last song, right?
Yeah.
On
Built to Last.
Yeah, that like you have never really. What was the inspiration there? Because I love all of your guys' records, but like that was a very standout track for drums,
oh, yeah.
particularly.
I guess it must have been Sepultura because
Roots.
Yeah, Sepultura kind of, you know, they started that whole like, you know, really bringing the tribal drums into things. So you know, everybody, it wasn't my idea. I forget whose idea it was. It might have been Lou's or I forget, but. They wanted to make it more percussive,
it's
just
cool
because
song.
Of the nature of the song.
Yeah,
and it ended up being actually a really cool touch.
Very cool song. Yeah, those two records are very special to me, as I think they are for many people during that time. You also write a lot. Like, is that fair to say? You know, you were talking about being a guitar player. I was under the impression that at first that you know. You were just the drummer, and everyone sort of did their own thing. But somebody mentioned to me that you actually write a lot of stuff in
yeah.
the band.
Yeah, I do a lot of writing. I do, because I play guitar as well. So, you know, anytime we have downtime or when we're working on a new record, I'm playing guitar every day.
Interesting.
And I'm actually playing guitar probably more often than playing drums at that point, because it's the actual writing of the songs that's the most important thing. It's not so much the drum parts. The drum parts I could work on later once a song is established. And you know, and it's not just the guitar and the bass, but it's also the vocals. So I write a lot of lyrics as well.
That's awesome, man. And it's got to impact like how you come up with your fills too, because like when you're that sort of instrumental in the process, like you're really thinking about this stuff probably when you're playing, I would imagine. Like, this is like sort of how I'm going to go into the next part, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's something that it took me a little while. Like, there was one time where I wrote lyrics, and I, you know, it wasn't until we were actually in the studio and I realized I had written the lyrics to go along with the drum fill.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And as soon as the engineer heard it, he was just like, oh, it sounds like a drummer wrote that. And I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, oh, shit, he's right. Like, why did I write it like that?
Well, there's
that?
A lot of that in hardcore, and some could say in, like, thrash, too, like, or extreme music, because, like, there's a lot of sing-alongs and a lot of cymbal grabs or just syncopated things where the words and the drums really are supposed to match up, which is interesting. You were talking about influences earlier. Who are your favorite hardcore drummers? And do you think there's such a thing as hardcore drumming, like as a separate sort of way of playing? Or do you think it's just sort of, you know, extreme drumming like anything else?
obviously, I would have to say Mackie is probably, you know, by far the biggest, like, hardcore influence.
That's Mackie from Cro-Mags, who also played on a couple of Bad Brains records as well in Hazen
Street.
Yeah,
I mean, he was the guy that kind of, like, taught the whole, because he was bringing a different style to the genre. Just, you know, as soon as he started playing in hardcore, he brought a new style to the music.
And he had a bounce. That was
exactly the thing. It was the bounce. And the bounce made New York hardcore really what it was.
Right.
Because before that, hardcore didn't have a bounce, no matter what city
like
it came
from.
Stuff.
There was never a bounce in, you know, no disrespect
Boston
to
stuff
Black Flag
or DC
or
stuff or whatever, you know, Negative Approach out of Detroit or anything like that. There was no real bounce. Every once in a while you'd have a hint of it, but it wasn't the way Mackie really worked that bounce.
Well, New York always had groove.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm right, but I always thought it probably came from hip hop too.
Yeah, I think so. Prominent. Yeah, because I think Mackie was very much inspired by hip hop and brought that into his drumming for the Cro-Mags. And he was the guy that was, you know, super important to everything that came afterwards.
And so if you were going to go on a, you know, I've seen the New York Hardcore Chronicles where they do this with all the people they interview, but if you had to go with like a top three of hardcore.
Oh, shoot. Well, definitely Mackie. I would say Earl, you know, from the Bad
Earl
Brains.
Hudson, yeah.
Because, you know, he just had that like sizzle. Everything was sizzle with him. Like, you know, very solid drummer, but also very high energy. Like the hi-hat was always just so fast and so just sizzled throughout the song.
I mean, he was kind of like almost the creator almost like of that. Like, because you had punk rock, but like nobody on the scene, unless I'm not thinking straight here, like ever played that fast. You know what I mean? I feel like that was before Minor Threat and before all these other bands that sort of kind of came around.
Yeah.
You know?
And for a third guy. I don't know. I'm kind of stumped. I'm a little stumped for hardcore, huh? Shit. Dave from that played on Victim in Pain.
Oh, yeah. The original drummer of Agnostic Front.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I would have to say him because that was such a... you know, an important record too.
Yeah.
To,
oh my God. Completely.
To the hardcore scene. And, you know, especially the New York hardcore scene. So, I would put him as the third guy that would be, inspiration as far as my drumming goes.
Yeah. No, I mean, these guys wrote the playbook for New York hardcore, and you guys carried it on the longest, I would say, and obviously Agnostic Front, but they took a break at one point and, you guys have really just, you know, it's unbelievable. So, congrats to you guys. I got a couple more questions for you, and we'll keep this kind of like, like almost like lists here, since I know we've been talking for a while. What equipment are you using? Are there any endorsements or anybody that you want to shout out?
Oh, yeah, Sonar. My first Sonar kit I owned back in the 90s.
Interesting.
And I sold it after I got a Premiere endorsement. Like, this was before I had an endorsement. And my first endorsement was Premiere. And once I got that, I was like, I had this extra drum set sitting around, even though I loved it. And I sold it. And it was the biggest regret that I ever had in my life. Yeah, because Sonars, especially like the mid-level Sonar stuff, works for hardcore like you wouldn't believe. It's just like, it's not, because, you know, once you go too fancy, then they're more about tone and everything. And it's like, it's had aspects of drums that you don't necessarily need in hardcore. Oh, and Zildjian, Kirsten out on the West Coast, has been like a darling to the band.
You have any rituals, warm-ups, things like that? I know you say you don't practice much, I think you were saying before, but I'm sure you have to warm up before you get on stage.
We don't, as a band. I practice a lot at home.
Oh, okay.
You know,
gotcha.
Before we do any kind of shows, I'm you know, I start a couple of weeks beforehand, just getting my body completely back in shape and, you know, ready. We are in touch with each other about what songs we're doing. And usually it works out enough that the first few shows back might show a little rust,
right?
But not necessarily individually, just in the chemistry
of the band
of the band
as a whole.
Yeah.
Top three favorite Sick of It All songs to play.
Oh shit! Seriously?
Yeah.
That narrows it down to only live songs.
Gotcha.
Because we have so many songs, but you know, there are so many that we don't play live. God, let me see. Got to put Step Down in there. Step Down is like always just like a nice driving song,
right,
which has like a good bounce to it as well.
It's and like, also like your kind of like a breakout hit. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and you can always count on that song to get a good reaction. So it's a like comfortable song and like, but it, you know, it's a longer one as well, a lot longer than a lot of other Sick of It All songs. I kind of like playing Inner Vision, the first song off of the latest record, because it has that old Discharge beat to mm-hmm. it. And it's just been a blast playing that song live. Like, it's just a lot of fun. Like, it's fun to play that beat. And with the little stops and everything, like you were saying, the syncopated.
There's a lot of that on the new record. I really like the single, too, the Crazy White Boy shit.
Yeah.
And if you had to pick a third one, I love Clobberin' Time. Who doesn't? I know it's kind of like more of an interlude.
Not really so much for me. Like, not drumming wise. Shit, I don't know.
I mean, that's one you can't do to a click.
Yeah, there are quite a few Sick of It All songs that can't ever work with a click. Even though it's shitty to open with this song, because for some reason I get fucking brain farts like throughout it. Like if we open with Injustice System, it's tough for me to play that song for some reason. But when it's like tucked into a set, or even if it's like at the end of the first segue or something like that, then it's fun to play and I like playing it, because then I'm kind of warmed up and I know what I'm doing and I kind of have the feel for it.
That's a rager, that one.
Yeah.
That actually, I the first time I stage dove in probably at least 10 or 15 years was when you guys played that a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
at the Bowery Electric.
Nice.
So
awesome.
I almost died also. But we're going to move on and sort of wrap it up in a second. But just really quick, let's do a shout out for your new record. It's out on Century Media right now, if you want to just tell everyone what it's called.
Yeah, it's called Wake the Sleeping Dragon. And we're all really happy with it. It was quickly put together, but it came out really well, and it has a touch of melody to it, more so than other stuff that we've done. It has you know, just like a good mix of all of our influences. They're all showcased on there, and I like that about it.
That's great. It's a really good record, and the video for it's kind of a tribute to Bad Brains. The crazy white boy shit video is fantastic.
Yep. Thank you.
Where can everybody follow you and the band on socials?
Oh, it's Sick of It All NYC on Instagram. Me, I'm Armand of It All on Instagram. I'm sorry, I don't know the other.
No. Listen, the kids these days seem to be following Instagram more than they follow Facebook.
Yeah,
these days,
I'm not on Facebook, so yeah. I don't really know.
Lastly, what's next for you? This will probably air in about a week or two. So, any upcoming tours? Anything you want to let everyone know about?
Do we have a couple of things confirmed? Like a couple of festivals down in Florida and North Carolina that we're playing with Agnostic Front that are like mainstream festivals, but that's going to be like in April or May. And then we have European festivals over the summer that are confirmed, but nothing else is confirmed, so I can't really say
now. Well, everybody can visit you guys on Instagram to see the promo.
And hopefully there's going to be something added in March, you know, not on this continent, but somewhere else. And okay. I just don't want to, you know, screw it up by announcing anything right now. But
worldwide.
Yeah.
just really quick, if you're ever in Brooklyn, New York, we're going to give a shout out to
Beer Street.
Boy Corey Bonfiglio and Beer Street.
Yep.
What's the Instagram, Corey?
Beer Street NY.
Beer Street NY. If you love beer and you want to run into this gentleman here, hopefully we won't get any stalkers. You might be able to find this guy drinking some really nice beer here with Corey at Beer Street.
As I like to do.
In Williamsburg. Thanks for listening, everybody. And don't forget to check out my last episode with Pokemo from Agnostic Front and Leeway. And pick up the new Sick of It All album and check them out in a country near you.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. Thank you, Armand.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to Chris and Armand for rapping. And thanks to you, the listener, for checking it all out. Hope you continue to enjoy the episodes, and I'll continue to try making them and cranking them. Hope to catch you on the next one. Crash, bang, boom.